Hi, and welcome to the Active Code podcast, brought to you by Aspire Active Partnerships. I'm Paul Griffiths, and joining me each week on the pod is Luke Johnson.
Aspire Active Partnerships is a community of like-minded business leaders who all believe that collaboration in the sports coaching and children's activity sector is essential for success. We've proven that working in collaboration does benefit business growth and essentially helps more children be more active more often.
To combat physical inactivity, we need organisations that are performing at their very best. Organisations will only operate to high standards if they are led well. So, we can focus on developing high-quality leaders throughout an organisation, not just at the top. Customers will experience higher quality services, which means heightened enjoyment levels and increased levels of physical activity. And if we do this at an early age, we know that we can build the foundations for a more active, happier, and healthier life. The Active Code investigates what it really takes to be a successful leader and how organisations can combat physical inactivity.
We won't be alone through this journey. We are joined by business owners and experts from our sector, as well as inspirational people from outside our industry. We'll understand the importance of physical activity to our guests, reflect on leadership experiences, and gain thought-provoking insights on how we can crack the Active Code, get more children more active, more often. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating and subscribe. LUSU transform the lives of children and young people with disabilities and do it through designing physical activity without barriers. Louise and Sue founded LUSU and have since inspired thousands of children, young people and adults to a life of physical activity, no matter their circumstance. As experts in inclusive sport and activity, Louise and Sue are energetic and knowledgeable individuals who are committed to changing the attitudes, techniques and skills of people within educational and sporting environments. If you truly want to make an impact on everyone, this episode is for you. Enjoy the pod. Louise and Sue from LUSU, welcome to the Active Code podcast. Can we come to you first, Louise, to give the listeners a bit of an insight into your professional journey so far?
Yes, I started off as a PE teacher. I was in secondary school, so it was PE and science. And then I came out of teaching and went into full-time coaching. And I coached a variety of sports, tennis, hockey and swimming were kind of my main three. And then kind of focused more on tennis and met Sue about 25 years ago. We coached together for quite a while. And then I moved up to Leeds and ran at the time it was a tennis centre based at a university, which became a high performance centre and then a coach education centre. And within that time, one of the students came to me and said he wanted to get involved in wheelchair tennis. I asked him if he'd got a wheelchair. He said yes. So the following day, we jumped on court and had a hit. And after that, I then started to coach him and kind of coach him full time. And that's kind of when I really got into disability sport. I was probably more of the performance end because he was one of the GB wheelchair players. And because of that, I then got asked to write content for basically a visually impaired tennis course. So I started to write content for some of the coach education courses. And through that, I then became the GBVI head coach for tennis and still coach that now. Sue and I, back in 2016, as I say, I was kind of doing the performance side as well as coach education and writing a lot of content for coach ed. And Sue was delivering loads of disability, which she'll tell you about. And we thought both of us coming together would be a really good idea, and we created LUSU Sports. So we've been going for just over 6 years now, and we kind of focus on a whole variety of sports, not just tennis. But that's me.
Brilliant. Thank you, Louise. And Sue, what does your journey look like?
Yeah, so my journey actually started, it's my 40th year in coaching. Back in the 80s, I'm dyslexic, so I didn't qualify as a PE teacher, but with my sporty background, I then became a sports coach in many sports, and I went into delivering sports in schools, and from there, I then went in 20 years, nearly 20 years ago, went into SEN schools. And that's where I really had the passion of making sure that everybody had that sporting chance. And then during the journey of working in SEN schools, I noticed the equipment wasn't the right equipment to deliver sport. So that's where, you know, we met each other, myself and Lou, in the coaching field through tennis. But we developed equipment so that everybody was able to play most sports because we wanted it to be fully inclusive. And then we've really been growing because we've been using all our knowledge between us within coaching and within inclusion and disability. Yeah, so that's us in a nutshell, I think.
Brilliant. Sue, just to touch on your want to be kind of a teacher and then go into schools to work, where did that kind of passion for working with children come from, would you say?
Well, I wanted to be a PE teacher because I was passionate about sport, because I was one of the, you know, because I wasn't very clever at school, I had a pathway of sport. And then somebody said to me, you know what, use your sporting knowledge and skills and go down the coaching. And I went more into tennis because of the using it as a work, a job, because I wanted to earn some money. Back in the day, I was a hockey coach and a badminton coach and a foot FA. And again, FA wasn't big in the 80s for females, so I didn't really get a job in a school. You didn't teach football then for girls football. So somebody said, well, focus on tennis. So I did. And that's where I've met. We tend to work on tennis, don't we?
And your background's from an activity and a sporting perspective. You've obviously got a passion for sport and activity. So what does activity mean to you both?
I mean, for me, I've been very fortunate because, like you say, both of us have played a lot of sport. So as a junior, I played most of my sport at county or regional level and just loved what sport did for me. So that was kind of meeting new friends, I loved team sport, but I also enjoyed kind of that individual aspect. So when I was playing tennis and I was doing singles, then obviously it was about me controlling the point and making the decision. So I think there's so much you get from sport, from the social element to decision making, to confidence, to the ability to meet friends. And some of my, you know, my real good friends now are friends that I made when I was sort of age 10 playing sport. But I think I went into teaching because I'm passionate about developing people and I just want to see everyone to be as active as they can be and to get all those benefits. There's so many, like I said, so many transferable skills from sport into loads of different aspects. And I think if we can allow people to enjoy being active is the fundamental thing, really have that enjoyment, really have the fun element, develop the skills, which can then assist in, you know, we talk a lot about, especially with children with disabilities, is can we use some of the fun ideas to create games that will help them build up strength without them realizing, which will help putting jumpers on and off. So it's kind of transferring into everyday skills. And then if I kind of focus more onto looking at my parents' age who are now in their, my mum will hate me saying this, in their 80s, you know, again, trying to keeping them active. And they've all been, you know, my dad was very active as a junior and watching him, you know, be a role model for me as, you know, as an adult. And then obviously as he's got older, you really see the importance of being active. So I think if we can get activity from our juniors, so from our primary school children, right the way through, and then into the kind of the elderly, then it really helps.
Yeah. Just on that one as well, it's probably not just around, it's not all about sports, competition, participation in sport. There's a really good point there, Lou, around that kind of skill transfer. And the kind of the gross motor skill and the fine motor skill development as a result of being active as a child and the importance of transferring that through the lifespan.
And that's,
I think a few people realize that, unfortunately.
I think the competition, you know, is there. I spend a lot of time with like my nieces and nephews and, you know, they're really competitive, but I think it's been structure. I've been, you know, doing competition within a structured field. And again, that just, there's loads of benefits for that. Because, you know, I think you still got to have competition within the school structure. It's just how you deliver it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big one for me is actually in 1986, I moved over to South Africa with my sport, not playing competitively. It was more of the girl I worked with was traveling over to visit her father, and I finished up staying there for 7 years, delivering in Lesotho, Namibia, in South Africa. So it was a big thing for me because we actually went separate ways. She was called Lesotho. But I was able to then join in with, because of my sport, make new friends. Then I also, that was an area where I started to see where I could help people. I had a massive passion for helping children and families that were finding, you know, it difficult to play a sport. So we'd come up with all sorts of games. So that was great, meeting new friends. The big fun factor for me as well, because I was very competitive when I was at school. And when I came back from South Africa, people had thought I'd changed and had added that, come on, let's relax now. I wasn't as competitive once I got back from South Africa. Yeah, and I learned a lot from them. I learned so much from when I worked in Lesotho of making the fun on the children's camps. I was very involved in the children's camps in Lesotho. And they were coming up with all different ways of, and I've transferred that now in with my inclusion of how to do different types of scoring. So yeah, so that's a huge part my life that I'll always have a wonderful memory.
Great journeys and for both of you, and no doubt great memories as well, which has helped to get to where you are today. And there's obviously, I think everyone's got a story to tell, haven't they, when it comes to kind of creating their own organization and running the business and having an impact. Are you still both active now? Is it still an important part of your daily routine?
No, definitely. I think potentially need to be a little bit more active. And I think that's if anyone's out there listening and setting up your own business, I think sometimes it's very easy to get caught in the trap of jumping up and doing emails and doing, you know, phone calls and all of that. And sometimes we neglect ourselves. And I think, you know, one of my biggest things through lockdown was to make sure that the activity was definitely at the front of everything. And then if you create those daily habits, then the activity comes part of it. I think it is really important. And that's something that Sue and I do when we meet. We will spend the day on doing business. But then we will make sure that we've got some time active, whether that's going out for a walk, just to get some fresh air, change the scene, change the environment, which then makes us more creative. Or, you know, tomorrow we're jumping onto a paddle court and we're going to have a game of paddle. Occasionally, we've got to make sure that we're not too competitive because we both are quite competitive. But yeah, it's an important part, for definite.
I'm just laughing at myself because talking about doing challenges or going on to doing keeping in with sport, we bought a tandem and we're still friends. But we're really good with each other in the way that we'll say to each other, come on, let's go and be active or let's go and do something. And yeah, we're doing paddle. That's a new one for us. And we're just in the process of doing the coaching for it. So again, we're upskilling all the time. We're learning all the time. We learn off each other. That's really nice. You know, we're very good friends and we bounce off each other. Again, you need somebody like that where you think, I'm not in the mood for playing a sport, or I'm not in the mood of being active. And then one of us will go, yeah, come on, let's do something. Yeah.
Is the tandem
the big question is who's going to win this paddle game? So that's the big question. You see,
right. Not. We're on the same side on the paddle. Yeah. But on the tandem, one, it's a Lusu orange. We painted orange. And we did Manchester to Blackpool on it. And
raised some money.
We did raise quite a lot of money. And we're still friends.
Just.
That's amazing. I was going to ask if it was in the bright orange colour. That's brilliant. That's amazing. So, onto kind of the work that Lusu does then. So, how do you encourage and motivate all children, young people, to take part in physical activity?
I think the core is putting the child or the person in the centre. So, being really person centred. And then really working on what they can do and then growing that. So really thinking about, will we do loads of work on tracking? So starting off with, can people track, whether it's tracking a ball, whether it's tracking a nylon square in the air, can they be tracking using their kind of their eyesight? Then we kind of move on to sending and receiving skills and then linking the movement to that. And I think, you know, everyone or majority of people now know about STEP, so space, task, equipment, people. So again, you know, constantly got that. We're constantly progressing ideas, and adding mini challenges in without children or the young people knowing. But again, Sue talks a lot about getting to what the person really likes. So Sue does a lot of work linking in with music. So finding out what music track someone enjoys and then, you know, making sure that's playing on in the background. And then we can start bringing people through. But I think having, for me, is that person-centered approach, being really passionate to see any small development, be really pleased when you see the self-confidence within the skill really grow, and then having that energy from the deliverer. Because I think if you are seen to be really passionate and have energy, then you just transfer that energy into that other person. And as Sue has mentioned before, quite a lot around equipment, thinking about the right equipment.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, we're setting a good example. I think that's a big thing. And that, like Lou said, that praise, that encouragement, that fun, that energy that you give off, then will get them to be, we experience that a lot, is that what we tend to set that example, then they will have that passion to be part of the activity. Introducing, you know, a new activity and getting them really involved on that side, showing them new skills. Yeah, yep. I think Lou's really touched on a lot is that personal sentence, and really finding out what really they would like.
We see it. We see, you mentioned a variety of things, and it's maybe introducing the new activity or new sport or new game that someone hasn't had the opportunity to try before. We see it when we deliver kind of Olympic workshops, that there's a lot of activities children have never been fortunate enough to take part in, and it can spark an interest or excitement in that new activity. Absolutely. In terms of common barriers to physical activity, what are they in general? So that might be in a school environment or at home or in a community environment, what kind of barriers are children, young people up against?
I think it's definitely the equipment has been huge right through our coaching career. It's always been the barriers of that equipment and not having the right equipment to make them feel part of the session. That's a barrier there. just, again, the looking at the environment, and I was delivering last week and I went into the sports hall and there was just no life there. There was just, and they were really shocked when I said, you need to bring the hall alive for, you know, if I felt flat walking into the hall because I hadn't brought it to life. Working over at Seashell last week and just having those facilities really made a difference for the family, the way that they felt safe, that the children were, you know, around the right people, around the equipment was safe, the venue was safe, even down to parking the car. That, you know, there were so many comments that, wow, you know, I can park my car right outside the hall. Another area is we've come across it, and we come across it a lot, is that the lack of knowledge, they're not upskilling themselves, related and working with, like I, last week, you know, I really did the research on some of those disabilities that some of them I'd never heard of. And I did the research so I could be preparing my sessions around that disability to make sure that they were included in the session.
Yeah, and then other barriers are, you know, as Sue said, sometimes we'll deliver training and we still hear about children that have been told, no, they can't participate. So we still hear stories of children not being part of PE lessons or games, and so therefore their activity doesn't exist within a school environment. They're back in the library, or they're working with a support worker, having additional training in other areas. And
Luke,
you know,
can I ask a question on the back of that? Sorry to interrupt you, but it's a really interesting point. That's still happening. Why is that still happening?
So some people, it's down to not knowing how to work with TAs and bringing that child into a mainstream setting. It's happening a lot with children that have got visual impairments because there's the fear factor of the child getting injured. So we're still, still hearing quite a lot of that. But, you know, as we said right at the beginning, activity is really important for the, you know, the transferable skills of fine and gross motor skills, which, you know, holding a pen, it requires fine and gross motor skills. So when we're teaching children to read and write, it's really important that we are promoting activity as a way of demonstrating that actually that's going to assist in reading and writing, because, you know, for us to hold a pen, we need to have the fine motor skills, but we also need the gross motor skills of being able to have a straight back, strong shoulder to be able to then form the letters on the page. And then when we're reading, in our culture, we read a lot from left to right. So if we can introduce tracking skills, then that assists in reading. And again, you know, getting them to focus. So if you can do activity and do an activity in a focused, whether you're focusing for 2 minutes on an activity, again, that really transfers into having that 2 minute of focus time when you're reading. So I think it's really important. I think the sad thing is, whether it's no to doing the lessons inside or whether it's no to doing outside, again, that's why we're really passionate about making sure that every child gets that opportunity of doing activity, because we don't know what's going on at home life. So we don't know if children are getting the opportunity to go outside and kick a ball or to be outside with friends and to get that socializing outside of school, or whether it is school is the only time where they can do activity. And again, through our work within schools, we've come across some fantastic teachers and some fantastic schools. But then we also hear that it's only the school environment that the child can participate in activity. So a lot of children with disabilities, when they try and join an after-school club, as in not within the school environment, but in a different environment, again, that's where barriers are faced. Their siblings can go, but they can't. So again, that's where it's even more important that the child can participate within the school environment, because potentially outside of school in clubs, that's again, they're told they can't. And a lot of that is just down to a bit of being, especially in coaching, a lot of coaches, they might not actually have disability or inclusion training within their national coaching qualifications. A lot of NGBs are getting a lot better than that. But also, there's a little bit of being scared. And I know when I first started, and when I was a teacher years ago, and then, you know, when I was coaching and there'd be a child with disability, I was scared, not because of the child, but more about me making a mistake. What would happen if I said the wrong thing? What would happen if I tried something and the child couldn't do it? What would happen if I was using the wrong equipment? And actually, we think about that all the time when we're teaching anyone. It's just a way of us self-reflecting and learning. A big message I speak when I'm talking about training to coaches and teachers is it's better to have a go and to see what you can do. And as I say, put the person first and work on what they can do and then just increase that.
Yeah.
The phrase, what gets measured, gets managed, was coined by the American management consultant Peter Drucker over 40 years ago. Although there have been some alternatives to this phrase, one that resonates with me is what gets measured gets improved.
In recent years, this alternative phrase has gained popularity, emphasising the idea that measuring progress is crucial to achieving improvement.
Scorecards are a great way to highlight your strengths and identify blind spots in your organisation while providing instant, actionable steps on how you can improve that needs improving.
So, how does your organisation measure up?
Head to capscorecard.scoreapp.com and take approximately 5 minutes to answer some yes, no questions. Once you've done that, you will get an instant personalised report tailored to your organisation with clear, actionable steps. And it's totally free.
That's capscorecard.scoreapp.com. And the link will be in the show notes too. You've covered a few barriers there. So on that point then, this is where Lusu work their magic, I guess, isn't it? So with regards to, we know that there's barriers, in particular, those barriers for the teachers and the coaches. And I've been there, you know, being in an environment where I feel totally uncomfortable many years ago now, that I just hadn't had any training or support from the governing bodies that did the qualifications or through my university pathway. There was never anything there. It was upon myself to actually go and seek support and advice and guidance. And I'm talking now probably 15, 16 years ago. And I was just shocked at how little support there was out there. So from a Lusu perspective now, I guess this is really is where you work your magic. So just want to kind of share with how you operate, what you offer, the support that is there to make sure organizations, their coaches, teachers in schools are becoming more confident because they have the knowledge and skills that you are able to transfer to them.
Yeah. We run our training tends to be a 2-hour workshop in schools. That's not either during an inset day or at twilight times. And we literally will run through a whole load of games, ideas on how to, as I say, put the person person-centered approach. And then we kind of work with the teachers. We look at national curriculum. We link that into it. We have loads of scenarios and we use all the different, let's say, the different types of equipment. But we try and show how easy it can be and how you can put the fun to it. And as Sue, you know, as mentioned earlier about the environment, I'm a big believer in how can we use the environment to bring the activity to life? So whether that's putting nylon squares, reaching up high, so they're in the door frame. So as the children walk into the PE hall, they've got to reach up and they grab the first bit of equipment for a warm-up. Can they, if you're working with someone who's visually impaired, can we put some ropes on the floor with some tape so that as they're coming in, they can feel and they know exactly they're coming into the sports hall because they've got a reference because it's tactile. So there's loads of fun little things like that. And then when you use then sort of Sue's magic of creativity with creating all the different games, it becomes a really fun course.
I think a big thing that really has really, what can I say, has gone on the, has been on the increase since lockdown. Because what we did do was obviously, like a lot of coaching companies, we did an awful lot of Zooms in the rooms, but we also supported the families and we supported that journey. And that for us has been huge because it's a lot of these TAs and parents, a lot of them are not from a sporting background, but they have got the most amazing creativity. And again, we supported them by building confidence. I think that was a big thing. And since lockdown, and this is where it's really been only increases, the support that we've been able to do, put a Lusu TV on, send videos, put onto social media, just little clips that just helps support them on ideas. And I've also noticed, again, last week, the amount of volunteers we had supporting the children, but it wasn't just students. It was parents who were saying, can actually I come along? Because I'm learning an awful lot from you, Sue, by just being there and what I can support my child with. So, yeah, I think that's, Lou's touched on quite a lot, but the videos, the TV, the training.
I was just going to say, I think also it's just mindful to remember that teachers and teaching assistants do a fantastic job in the constraints that they're in. And I think, you know, if I think about the time when I was learning to become a teacher, we touch upon, you know, you do your teacher training, and you only get so many weeks on a certain topic, and then you move on. Then you have a couple more weeks on rugby, then you move on to a different sport, And again, with the inclusion element, you know, you might only have it for 1 week. So a lot of the time, as we've mentioned earlier, and yourselves have mentioned, it's about upskilling and sort of that skill development and looking for it, because there's so much pressure from other areas on what's more important. Some people might think, oh, it's the maths is more important, the curriculum. Others, it's the PE that's more important, and it's just trying to get that balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Sue, you mentioned Lusu TV. Can you just explain quickly for the listeners, what is Lusu TV and how could they potentially access that?
It was really, it came about why parents, coaches, teachers asking, have you got any resources? They're all just little short clips just to show you what you can do at home or in a park or swimming. And it's just myself and Lou showing ideas that can support the activity from, you know, what disability the person may have to what sport they're doing, and then it's just clipping onto any of those activities. There's lots. There's a lot of me. That was a lot from lockdown to help families.
Yeah, and so basically to access it, you can go on to lususports.com and look for the memberships, and there's the Lusu TVs linked in with there. And as Sue said, we've tagged every video, so you can search by sport, by disability, and whether you want to be inside or outside. And as I say, there's a lot of videos of Sue absolutely being as creative and as fun as she can. And it doesn't use always a load of different, you know, equipment. So some of the equipment might be a frying pan, some pegs, and a ping pong ball. Other bits of equipment might be rolled up pieces of sock and inner tights to make some kind of fun gadget. So it doesn't always require people to have to purchase equipment. It's about using equipment that's around you.
Yeah, it was interesting actually, because I was showing somebody, and it was got me at the park, and I was rolling a ball up a slide, and then I was swinging a ball on the swing, and then, yeah, there was all different ways that you can be active with what's around you.
We did a workshop with personal assistants, and that was all aimed at, can you make your journey active? So whether that was you were going to, I don't know, a community hall and you were going to get onto the bus, and what could you do? Could you get off the bus stop, a stop earlier, and then play hopscotch through the, on the pavement as you were going? And could you count how many, I don't know, trees you saw? And so we were trying to include fun activity, but within a journey.
You mentioned Sue's creativity. It's going to be very difficult to explain this in a podcast, no doubt, but a bit of a test for you. You mentioned there an activity that involved a frying pan, a peg, and a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Explain what on earth that activity is for us.
Yeah. So that was when we were doing some targets for people that were blind or visually impaired. For them to be able to get the feedback that the ball had gone into the frying pan or into the pan, we needed something that could make sound. So therefore we put the pegs in. So the pegs created the sound, which was the feedback. The ping pong ball's quite a nice sound when it lands as well. So by throwing a ping pong ball towards the pan with the pegs in, if they were successful, they heard it. And if they weren't, they didn't get the same reward. But then we then went one stage further and got some tinfoil paper and put the tinfoil paper, the pan on top of the tinfoil paper. So now if you imagine the target, the center of the target is your pan with your pegs. And then the peripheral outside of the pan, that's your aluminium foil. So you're getting a different sound. And then if it doesn't hit that, you're hitting the carpet and doesn't make any sound. So again, when the child is throwing the ball, they can work out how close they are.
Amazing. And how much time do you spend innovating? Does it naturally happen? Do you actually schedule time? Yeah. Does it like you out for a walk and you think, ping pong ball's tinfoil?
It's one thing that both of us are really good at. And as Sue said, we kind of bounce ideas off each other, but we're literally, with any bits of equipment or anything around, we can pretty much make a game up. I think that comes from, you know, as a child, I used to play Kirby endless with a can, or, you know, we were just outside all the time playing games against the garage, or, you know, standing on a wall and coming up with games. And I think as a child who's passionate about just doing sport, just doing activity, you made games. Unfortunately, these days, you know, social media and using tablets and using phones and stuff like that, a lot of the kids, they just need a bit of guidance with creativity. And actually, if you take that, you know, take all the electronic devices away and let the kids be creative, they really can come up with games. And again, one of the things that Sue and I absolutely love is doing training courses or working with the kids, because we pinch off ideas from them. And then all we do is, I really like the starter of that. We'll now add a little bit more, and all of a sudden it becomes a little golden nugget of an idea.
And that's really interesting, because last week, and I put it on my social media, is that, you know, I've been delivering for 40 years. Just what Lou's just said is a young child come up with, didn't want to stand, so he was sat on the floor, and then he put the racket there, and then he started bouncing the ball to me on the racket. And I couldn't film the boy, but he had complex disabilities, but he was able to do that and push the ball and make it bounce on the racket. So I've never, you know, it's a great activity, and we must have done it for about 10 minutes. And again, the PA that was working, I mean, I moved around, but the PA took over and she went, I'm loving this. I could do this with my little, you know, her little boy. So again, we're learning all the time. And if you give the child that piece of equipment, they will come up with some great ideas.
Yeah. I guess your challenge is trying to get all of these ideas into one central point so that you don't lose them.
Yeah. No, it is. And then it's just, you know, my nieces and nephews, I'm known as the aunt that has a boot full of equipment, and whether that's cones, balls, I don't know, an old cricket bat, something from a secondhand shop that's something weird and wacky that they've never seen. And then it's literally, right, Auntie Lou's here, let's come up with a game. And, you know, it just takes, I'm really lucky it takes me back to being a childhood, and that's what I used to do.
And I think that's a big thing, because my father was, you know, the amount of people say, you're just like your dad, Sue. You'll come up with a generation game. You'll come up with, it's a knockout. And that's what my dad did on the street. He was very creative. What you could do with a pair of clogs on your feet. But yeah, it has been passed on, and I'm still, you know, I'm nearly 60, but I feel like I'm 21, you know, doing all activities.
For any teachers, coaches, educators, volunteers who want to motivate, encourage, inspire all children to take part in physical activity, what top tips do you think you could kind of give us an insight on?
Make it fun. Be very enthusiastic. Again, setting those good examples. Creative.
But yeah, for me, person-centered approach, and really think about the environment. So if you're working with a child with visual impairment, think about what's behind the person who's sending the ball to them. If it's an open bat, so if, I don't know, they're outside and there's an open fence behind them, it's hard to track the ball. Whereas if someone stands and there's a wall behind them, and it's all a blocked space, then it's a lot easier to track a ball. I think for me, it's just about having a look at the environment and really getting to understand the person and what their needs are.
Yeah.
Can I just take people to the training that you do? Because I know you've worked with our team and many of our partner organizations as well. I believe some of the training it involves putting the educators in the shoes of children with a certain disability. Could you give a bit of insight on that, please?
Yeah, so we do take with us sim specs, blindfolds, wheelchairs, occasionally frames and ear defenders. And basically, that's just to allow people to just have a bit of an understanding. So I went on my own journey. I'm visually impaired in my left eye. I got hit by a tennis ball whilst I was coaching one day. And unfortunately, I lost the central vision. Overnight, I went to become a beginner because I couldn't throw and catch because I have no depth perception. So all of a sudden, I understood what it was like to be a beginner. Whereas prior to that, I'd always been really good at sport. So I can't remember having ever been a beginner. So I used to get frustrated as a coach on how to coach beginners. Whereas now I fully understand kind of all the stages you have to go through to be able to catch a ball. We try and do that in a little bit within our training. You know, we will say, where are the sim specs? What are you noticing? I'm noticing that with these sim specs, I'm having to hold my head at this angle so that I can therefore use the sight that I do have to be able to sight the ball or whatever's the object that we're working with. Okay, so what's happening with your neck? Actually, I'm finding that my neck's bent over. So when a child with that sight potentially is looking at you, we as teachers, we talk about eye-to-eye contact. The child might not be giving you eye-to-eye contact because if they give you eye-to-eye contact, they can't see you. Whereas if they move their head and they look like they're looking somewhere else, they're actually using the vision that they've got to see you. So again, it's just having that awareness, similar with when we get the wheelchairs out. Again, it's just to have that understanding of what does it mean if you're doing the activity in a seated position? Where do you need the ball to be? So if you're doing a bounce pass, where do you need the ball to be bounced for it to land on your lap? What's it like if the balls are on the floor and you can't reach down? What do you need to do? So in that case, you might say, we need to raise the floor up. So how are we going to do that? We'll use tabletop. Okay, so now we're using tabletop. Are you now fully involved in the sport? Yeah. So now you're fully included. And I think a lot of that has been from chatting to a lot of the children and young adults that we work with who have said, you know, all we want to do is be included. We just want to give sport a go. So we try and bring some of that to light within a training course. And I say by using some of these aids, it's just a way of saying, what are you experiencing? What are you finding? So if you're in a wheelchair and you're not being included, what's that making you feel like? And that's the reason why we use it in training.
We also use in the training, and Lou touched on it earlier, is scenarios. So we write, say, you know, little Tommy's in a wheelchair and we want you to deliver a basketball session. How are you going to do that? Or it might be that we're delivering a football session. What type of balls are you going to use? Are you going to stick with a size 5 hard ball? Or are you, again, we always talk about step, how, you know, we must use the step module in our training. But the scenarios has been really a big one. And then making sure that they have a go at wearing the sim specs, that we're having a go in the wheelchair. And we link them really nicely together. And when we were doing the training for your guys, they really felt that was a big part in the training and doing the scenarios. Again, they had to go at doing the basketball, and the basketball's at the height. How tall's a basketball net?
Mm.
So, yeah, so those are areas that we do focus on within the training.
That's brilliant. Yeah, to be able to be in the shoes of other people and fully understand it, it's such useful insights. And like you said, the people that we've spoke to that have taken part in the train absolutely loved it. I remember at one of the conferences, we had about 50 people playing the different activities, and they were absolutely buzzing off it. They loved it. For organizations or coaches listening, do you have any recommended podcast books or people that they could listen to or watch that would give them more insights, obviously apart from Lusu TV, which everyone all have jotted down?
Yes, books wise. So I've used Inclusive Climbing, which anyone's doing outdoor education, that's quite a good manual. The other one is there's a disability inclusion training manual, but there isn't loads of books out there. I think podcast-wise, I've been listening quite a lot to the Paralympics GB podcast. So that's with Hannah Cockcroft. And again, a lot of that is kind of interviewing different people, but kind of, I suppose, listening, but really listening to the reasons why people have got into activity, or, you know, some people talk about the barriers and then really think about, are any of those barriers within the context that kind of I work in? There's an American one called Move United. That's called Redefining Disability. But I think any podcast, I mean, I'm listening a lot to the High Performance podcast or the Diary of the CEO. And I think with any podcast that you listen to, there's always going to be a little golden nugget that you can take out of there and think about it within the context that you're working at.
Perfect. And then I want to come to both of you for your answer on this last question. And you get 30 seconds each to answer it. what can organizations do to get more children with disabilities more active more often?
You or me?
You go first.
For me, is make it as inclusive as you can. Get the children working with each other and get some Lusu training.
Say the question again.
What can organisations and coaches do to get more children with disabilities more active more often?
I think a big one for me is actually volunteering to go with part of these activities first. I think that something I've got very involved in is frame running. So now I'm starting to learn a lot about that. So volunteering into another sport that they're not delivering. Again, I would say get into doing a lot of training. That's a big one. Always upskilling, because we're always doing our training. I mean, part of the LTA for us is brilliant because they're always, we have to get license points to make sure that we're always upskilling there. So definitely training. The LUSU, obviously the LUSU training courses, because we make sure that it's fully inclusive. Because it's interesting actually, because we're writing courses for governing bodies because there's not much out there. I was approached last week regarding Manchester United Foundation because there's just nothing that's out there.
Brilliant. Amazing. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's been incredible. You mentioned a few podcasts you listened to get little bite-sized nuggets, golden nuggets from, and I think listeners would have got a lot from this episode. Your background, your kind of passion behind helping young people, children and adults as well, who can't normally access maybe sport or physical activity like many people can. To your knowledge and expertise, absolutely incredible. So yeah, anyone looking to upskill themselves, definitely head over to the LUSU website and check out LUSU TV. Just if anyone wants to reach out to you both, just to connect and ask a few questions, what's the best method?
Either drop us an email, and the email address is info@lususports.com, or we're on social media. So a lot of people pop messages on our Facebook or our Twitter accounts. I don't use Instagram loads, but we have got Instagram there. But yeah, just pop a message on the social media and we'll get back to you straight away.
And my number is actually on the website. So if you take a look at the website, you'll find it's Sue's mobile.
Perfect. Thank you, Louise. Thank you, Sue, very much. And we'll speak soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you. Thank you.
To subscribe to the pod, search for the Active Code on your podcast app. Let's work together to get more people more active more often.